Empire Lines uncovers the unexpected, often two-way, flows of empires through art. Interdisciplinary thinkers use individual artworks as artifacts of imperial exchange, revealing the how and why of the monolith empire. In this episode, Dr. Desmond Manderson lashes new layers atop Australia's colonial founding myths. Through Gordon Bennett's 1991 painting, Possession Island.
The date is the 22nd of August, 1770, and the place is an isolated speck off the coast of far north Queensland in Australia. A black man, brightly dressed in red and gold, carries a tray of drinks. Beside him, Captain Cook and his men salute the Union Jack. But next to the vivid black figure, they are a pallid and indistinct bunch, hardly more than sketches or outlines, covered with splotches and dribbles of paint in soft shades of red, yellow, white, and blue. Possession Island, by the Indigenous Australian artist Gordon Bennett, made its public debut in 1992. Stretching over 1.5 by 2.5 metres, its size matches its ambition, reimagining and deconstructing nothing less than the birth of the Australian nation. When Captain Cook planted that flag on Australian soil in 1770, the entire continent became part of the British Empire. In an instant, a legal system was transplanted to fill the vacuum left by an empty land, terra nullius. This story was, and in many cases still is, taught in constitutional classes across the country, as if it were a simple fact. British law extended to the whole of Australia from that single day in 1770. But how can such a claim be true when almost a million Aboriginal people were then living under their own laws right across the continent? Almost none of them even saw a white man until many years, maybe a century later. How could Cook claim to have conquered a continent not even fully mapped, and of which so-called Possession Island is not, geographically, a part? What rendered this legal myth unproblematic for so long can best be termed the colonial imagine. Australia's national coming-of-age stories have always been dominated by shop-worn tropes. The stockman, the explorer, the settler, the squatter, the soldier, the native. Wool, wheat, and gold. Yet the unreal quality of these myths does not prevent them from generating real-world consequences. On the contrary, their mythic innocence shields them from scrutiny. Many major contemporary Indigenous artists talk about their work in terms of truth-telling. They seek to portray the real facts and events behind the so-called discovery, settlement, and exploration of Australia. The real violence, the conflict, the massacres, the abductions, the discrimination, and the exploitation behind the takeover of a whole continent and the dispossession of its inhabitants. But the artist Bennett approached the problem differently. He chose to excavate representations of colonial history, old paintings, drawings, stamps, newspapers, and textbooks. The assemblage of scenes, images, stories, and tropes that, in sum, form something like Australia's visual common sense. It is just this assemblage that Gordon Bennett sought to disrupt in Possession Island. Bennett was not the first artist to depict the moment on tiny Possession Island when Cook asserted the rights of the British Empire over the continent of Australia. Bennett's painting is actually a subtly reworked copy of a much earlier image, originally painted by J.A. Gilfillan in 1857, with the title Captain Cook Taking Possession of the Australian Continent on Behalf of the British Crown, A.D. 1770. This painting was then etched by Samuel Calvert and published in the Illustrated Sydney News in 1865, a century after Cook's visit. Other drawings based on Calvert's reproduction made their way into libraries and school history textbooks for the next 100 years. This is exactly how myths work. Copies of copies of copies, endlessly circulating, gradually acquiring the veneer of reality. Calvert and Gilfillan reduced the local inhabitants to fauna, with the sole exception of that black servant in European dress who witnesses Cook's actions. The hoisting of the colours in the name of the king, the show of force, the military parade with fife and drum, even the celebratory tipple, are all ritual actions. Captain Cook neither needed nor asked for the consent of the natives in his colonial endeavours, but he did need witnesses to confirm that it had all been done in the proper form. Yet this image, like many myths, jumbles up different events and times. The location actually looks less like Possession Island, way up in the tropics, than Port Jackson, 2,500 kilometres south. Port Jackson, later known as Sydney, is where the British in 1788 established a penal colony, their first settlement in Australia, full 18 years after Cook's voyage. Even the Union Jack in the picture is anachronistic. The United Kingdom did not come into existence until 1801. Possession and settlement, nation, empire, and kingdom thus fused together in one fabulous, impossible moment. The anomalous servant at the heart of the picture is also an anachronism, a time traveller, a ghost in reverse, some indigenous man from the future, transported back in time. Perhaps he is there to witness the legal authority of European whiteness that would eventually domesticate him. Not just a witness to empire, his transformation from a savage to a docile British subject is the ultimate proof, the fait accompli of British power. Bennett's painting reprises Calvert and Gilfillan's iconic image. But in Bennett's hands, the black figure is given a dramatic prominence, set against a black and white geometric grid that feels like a portal in time. Cook and his servant lock eyes. It's the only real encounter that takes place. And in that look, the witness suddenly accumulates not just a passive legal function, but an active moral one. He highlights an alternative subject position from whose perspective the colonial story could be observed, remembered, and judged, as indeed it is. Gilfillan and Calvert invite us to see the performance of sovereign power from the British point of view, the witness playing a necessary but minor role. Bennett reverses the gaze. The colours of Bennett's Possession Island are the colours of flags and thus hint at possible futures. The imperial figures are faded and defaced by wild splashes of colour like an exploded Union Jack. Meanwhile, the indigenous man is dressed in the bold colours of the Aboriginal flag. Only time will tell which of these prophecies of Australia will win out. Bennett's squiggles and drizzles of colour are disorienting. Layered over the top of the original image, they are a purposeful nod to one of the key figures of artistic modernism, Jackson Pollock. Bennett's juxtaposition of Pollock's colourful and lively abstract art with an historical scene that took place 200 years earlier and half a world away seems at first glance perverse. In fact, though practising in 20th century America, Pollock was to play an important role in recent Australian cultural history. Blue Poles, his huge 1953 masterpiece, was purchased by the fledgling Australian National Gallery in 1973. A storm of public controversy followed, with media commentators and conservative politicians letting off predictable steam about wasting public money on giant, childish scribbles. Nowadays, the story is typically told as the moment in which Australia declared to the world its cultural independence, our post-colonial Possession Island. Though perhaps it was just the moment when we swapped our allegiance from the British Empire to the American one. Bennett juxtaposes the histories of New York modernism and Australian colonialism very differently. He describes his use of the over-painted modernist trace of a Pollock skein as a metaphor for the scar as trace and memory of the colonial lash. Amongst other things, Bennett's work tackles the chilling arrogance of the claims of the fine art tradition to transcend the individual and the corporeal, define the universal, and to tell a story of aesthetic progress. Our art galleries often drum into us a trajectory of relentless progress from rooms of primitive art via the Renaissance to the giddy heights of modernity. But in Bennett's eyes, this narrative of art echoes and conditions the narrative of colonialism. At stake in both is the march of civilization from primitive to modern man. Possession Island reminds us of the violence in Australia's colonial march of civilization. Bennett juxtaposes the lash of the paint as it hits the canvas with the lash of the whip as it sinks into flesh. Linking Pollock's oozing red dribbles and blue poles with the welts and bruises left on human bodies, Possession Island exposes the relationship between intentions and effects, vision and blindness, purity and violence, stories of progress and hearts filled with hate. Bennett's body of work shines an equally subversive light on the coming-of-age story of Australian art too. The Impressionist movement, led by Frederick McCubbin, Tom Roberts and Arthur Streeton, paved the way for a uniquely Australian aesthetic. But they did so using romanticised images of the settler experience, which, even in the 1880s, were nostalgic and backward-looking. Their work celebrates the courage, struggle and triumph of the pioneers as they tamed an unforgiving land. There is a great deal that is false or hidden by such a narrative. McCubbin's paintings, for example, never acknowledge the destruction of the physical environment entailed by 100 years of violent conquest, nor the decimation of the indigenous people who had lived in harmony with the land for 65,000 years. Take Violet and Gold, painted by McCubbin in 1911. In his tranquil scene, deep in the Australian bush, the early morning or late afternoon sun pierces the thick-set trees, illuminating a few stray cows that drink from a pool of clear water. The taming of the landscape, its conversion from wilderness to agricultural production, is subtly but powerfully glorified. But look at the multicoloured and scratched surface of McCubbin's canvas. His brushwork is carved, angular and splotchy. Up close, very, very close, the picture is utterly unrecognisable. It has a palette and a texture that seems unmistakably Pollock-like, 40 years ahead of its time. Even the trees look like blue poles. The temporal narrative that divides Aboriginal, colonial, and modern art collapses. So too, the strict dichotomy between a colonised and decolonised mindset. Like the central figure in Bennett's painting, the anachronistic trace of blue poles in Violet and Gold also leaves a haunting trace of colonial violence. Viewing McCubbin through Pollock and Pollock through Bennett offers an entirely new perspective on all three artists. We cannot unsee the trace and memory of the colonial lash in the recesses of McCubbin's bush and in the rough scratches of his palette knife and brush. The brooding bush takes on a new inflection, as if the Aboriginal people that inhabited these places were still there, hidden witnesses, subjecting us to their unseen gaze or ghosts. McCubbin's omissions are no longer simply an absence. They fill the image with a loss and a cry. How we understand the connections between and politics of these different art traditions matters. In 2016, the National Gallery in London devoted a major retrospective to the work of the Australian Impressionists. The problematic myths behind their art were hardly mentioned. But now, Tate Britain's A Year in Art, Australia 1992, reveals how major Australian art confronted issues around Aboriginal rights in the wake of the Mabo case. Played out in Australia's High Court, Indigenous Torres Strait Islander Eddie Mabo defeated the state of Queensland to assert his people's continued pre-colonial rights to native title over their land. This famous 1992 decision overturned centuries of conventional wisdom about Australia's legal history. It conceded that terra nullius was just a myth, and a very damaging one at that. 1992 was also the year that Possession Island was first exhibited, and it's fitting that Possession Island sits at the heart of the Tate exhibition today. Through both legal and artistic frameworks, we can revisit our stale myths about the past and retell the narratives that shape a nation. Mabo, like a palimpsest, tried to write a new story over the top of terra nullius without erasing it entirely. So too Possession Island paints a new story over the top of Captain Cook without erasing him entirely. Bennett's response to the colonial myths of settlement employs a distinct temporal logic. Call it irony. He uses anachronistic and unexpected juxtapositions to unsettle how we think about an event or a history. Imperial powers are deadly scared of irony. It threatens to unpick their carefully curated narratives of power and legitimacy. Irony queers our relationship to the past, whether the past of colonial law or the past of colonial art. That has implications, not just for how we think about the past then, but how we think about ourselves now. The seat covers on Sydney buses strangely resemble Bennett's Possession Island in colour and style. A bright blue background covered in scrawls, splashes and lines of red and white. Perhaps the echoes are unintentional. Nonetheless, thanks to Bennett, they take us back to Port Jackson. Port Jackson Pollock, as it were. Ground zero of the British Empire in Australia and Australian modernism. They bring to mind a trace of the colonial lash every time we take a seat.
Empire Lines is produced by Yelena Sofronievich. For more episodes, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.